This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Well, today we're going to be meeting somebody for the first time whom I have wanted to meet for a long time. Leslie Kane gave me an introduction to this remarkable man a couple of years ago, actually. He sent me his book called An Extraordinary Journey, and I have to tell you, that is an understatement. I'm telling you right now, an understatement. The Stuart Alexander's subtitle is The Memoirs of a Physical Medium. There is an epilogue by Leslie Kane, and let me read you a brief statement by somebody else who you will know quite well. On August 11, 2015, my wife Anne died. An hour and a half later, she returned. She did this very cleverly by not contacting me, but rather a friend who was not yet aware of her passing. Our materialistic world has stricken us with soul blindness, but that is not true of Stuart Alexander. Reading An Extraordinary Journey, one cannot fail to come to an awareness that there is another level to reality. This book is an inspiration and a joy. It's about physical mediumship. Stuart, welcome to Dreamland.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you very much for inviting me, Whitley.
Well, I think it's going to be a wonderful experience to talk together. And folks, I have to tell you just from the get-go here, you have to get and read this book. We live in a soul-blind world, and it is screaming at us from every side, go blind, stay blind, don't believe, take everything in question, look at it three ways, four ways, five ways, but never the true way. An Extraordinary Journey cuts through all of that, and it cuts through it with great decision and honesty. I think, Stuart, the place I'd like to start is the sitting with Helen Duncan, which is really what started you with mediumship, isn't it?
No, it isn't actually. It isn't actually. It was in actual fact when my brother. I think I was probably about 22 years of age at the time, so we're going back 50 years now, half a century. He purchased a book in a second-hand bookshop called On the Edge of the Etheric by, of course, Arthur Finlay. Now, we didn't know at the time that that was and still is spiritualism's all-time bestseller. Now, that opened up to a world to us that we had never suspected. I'd had no particular interest in spiritualism, and I suppose, like most people who know nothing about it, I just imagined people sitting around tables with their hands resting on the top in the half light asking, is there anybody there? And I mean, that was the extent of my ignorance, like most people who know nothing about it. But that book introduced me to something that I'd never ever, well, I'd never known anything about. It was Arthur Finlay's recounting of his sittings with this remarkable physical medium in Scotland called John Gamble Sloan. So it was like a door was opened within me, and that's where it all really started, Whitley. That's where it all started. And from there, we went on to read a great many books about spiritualism, particularly physical mediumship, of course. And that's where it all began. Had my brother not purchased that book and passed it to me to read, the chances are that you and I would not be having this conversation now. Chances are that my life may have been entirely different.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, by the way, folks. I made a mistake. When I opened the book, I opened it not to his first experience, but to somebody else's, because the book ranges around it. There are lots of examples of physical mediumship in the book besides Stewart's. It's a survey really of the whole area. But we'll get back to that incident, by the way, the Helen Duncan incident, which is very worth discussing anyway. Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a brief break for you. I hope that you listen up and decide, as always, I hope, to subscribe to unknowncountry.com so you don't have to listen to these commercials. We'll be right back. You know, we live right now in a time of great upheaval and personal loneliness, and also dread. The dread comes from the fact that we've been taught that we are only material bodies, and therefore we're terrified of death as never before. But it's not true. And in my book, Jesus, A New Vision, I look at this in a completely new way, not through the lens of Christianity, and not through the lens of secularism either, by exploring the life of Jesus and his teachings in this new way, Jesus, A New Vision sheds fresh light on the meaning and power of his life, his parables. It explores the mysteries of the Gospels of Thomas and Mary with fresh insight, and it explains why he did what he did, which was to commit suicide by crucifixion. Then it goes into what the Shroud of Turin really is. It is not a medieval forgery. Something extraordinary happened in that tomb. To find out, read Jesus, A New Vision. It is truly a first. It's in pre-publication on Amazon right now. It'll be out as a Kindle on January the 15th, then as a paperback, a hardback, and an audiobook shortly thereafter. We're talking to Stewart Alexander. His book, Extraordinary Journey, The Memoirs of a Physical Medium, with an epilogue by one of Dreamland's favorite guests, Leslie Keene, and an endorsement from me, from Whitley Strieber, and from a number of others, Jeffrey Mishlove, the wonderful New Thinking Aloud host. Now, I've been on his show many times. He gives it a lovely endorsement. The honorary president of the Spiritualists National Union, Eric Hatton, gives it a wonderful endorsement, and many, many others. And for good reason. Stewart, can you tell us what physical mediumship is?
Yes, of course. Mediumship, as you probably know, Whitley, comes in two different forms. One is referred to as mental mediumship. Now, this can include clairvoyance. That's people who profess to be able to see the so-called dead. Clairaudience, people who perceive or are able to hear the so-called dead. And various other things. Now, physical mediumship is entirely different. Physical mediumship is where, in the presence of a physical medium, under the correct conditions, the spirit world are able to manifest in a physical manner. In other words, they can make knocking sounds. That's a sort of an elementary form of physical manifestation, knocking sounds, and then we go on to perhaps where the spirit people are able to actually speak in their own voices at a distance from the medium. I've had experience of that, incidentally, which we can talk about later. Then I think the creme de la creme of all physical mediumship is where the spirit people are actually able to materialize in light, usually dim red light. So they are, to all effects and purposes, they are solid human beings. And whilst this may seem extraordinary to anyone who has no knowledge of this whatsoever, I can assure them that this is reality under the correct conditions when a suitable medium is present. Absolutely, it is. basically physical mediumship is something quite different to mental mediumship.
Now, you're talking, in a sense, to the converted, because I've had an experience of physical mediumship myself. I did not know what it was. I had no idea, and I never even studied mediumship. If you'd asked me at the time what a medium was, I would have given you a very vague answer. But I meditate a lot, and I have meditated with non-physical beings for a long time, including my wife, whom I meditate with every night, and also every day at 1 o'clock she shows up, not in the physical, but close to it. So I'm used to it now. But this happened back in the 90s. Someone began coming, and I could feel their presence and even hear them. They were very, they were not quiet. And my wife could not meditate in the same room with me when they were there, because she couldn't see them and it made her too nervous. But she could, the presence was very palpable. So I finally said out loud, look, you've got to, I have to see you physically, or I can't be comfortable meditating with you, because meditating with someone who's invisible but obviously here is just too awkward. Later that night, I was awakened by someone thumping on my shoulder, and I opened my eyes, and there was a man sitting on the foot of the bed.
Wow.
Completely physical. And I, you know, I thought, at first it scared the hell out of me, you know, because I thought there was a prowler in the house. But then I could see he was wearing a tunic. He sort of looked like, he did not look like he, and he was fairly small. He was about 5'6", I would say. And clearly not an ordinary intruder. And I thought to myself, my God, it's him. It's who's meditating with me. He's showing himself just like I asked. So I went down to the foot of the bed, and I looked right into his face. I took his hand in my hand. His hand was light, but it was there. And I smelled his skin. I smelled the back of his hand, because I wanted to know, I wanted how physical was physical here. And it smelled very strong. It smelled of the hand of somebody who did not often bathe, but it was a definitely human smell, very definitely. And then I dropped his hand in surprise, because this the body odor was so powerful, and he disappeared.
Right.
Now, so I believe you. Now, what I want to do now is I want to talk about your journey into physical mediumship, because, you know, it's not something, it's not where you start. And yet you're one of the world's most extensively studied physical mediums, I think. Are you not? I believe you are. Yes, you are.
Well, as I said just earlier, Jeff, what you see, we started by reading. Then, after a while, we began to visit the local spiritualist churches. And then sometime later, we decided to form our own circle. And this was made up of family, friends, and our next-door neighbours who were very interested. Now, when I say this to you, I say it in all sincerity, like everything else I say, not a single one of us who sat within that circle had any thoughts whatsoever that we may develop mediumship. That wasn't how we started off. What we hoped for was perhaps, what was in our minds was that perhaps if we present to the spirit world the correct conditions, then perhaps they could use the combined energy of all the sitters to make us aware of their presence. And that's how it was. You know, and we would sit week after week all together, sitting in a darkened room. The reason we sat in a dark room was because this is what we understood was necessary, or made it simpler, easier for the spirit world to manifest. So we decided right from the beginning we would totally black out the room, and that's how we sat, and nothing ever happened for a long time. From time to time we had spiritualist mediums come and sit with us, and they were always very enthusiastic. They could sense things that we couldn't sense, see things we couldn't see. So we just used to sit there every week playing soft, gentle music. And, you know, it was lovely just to all be together, to walk into that room, shut the door, and shut the door to the outside world, so that we were just all as one together, all in harmony together, all with the same hopes and aspirations. And that's how we sat for a long, long time. And nothing, as I say, nothing happened. Now, do you want me to carry on with this? Because it's a bit of a story.
Yes, please.
Okay. So we sat for a long time. Nothing ever happened. And then one evening, my brother telephoned me, and he said to me that he and his wife, my sister-in-law, were thinking of having a little sitting. Would I like to come along? And to be honest, I'd had a very stressful day in the office, and at first I said no, and we talked for a while, put the phone down. Then I started to think to myself, well, if I don't go, he'll be ringing me tomorrow morning, he'll telephone tomorrow morning and tell me that they'd had a breakthrough, something had happened. So I thought, I'd better go. So I rang him back and I said, look, I said, I will come. And so I arrived half an hour later, or whatever it was, and we just sat around the table. He was at the head of the table, I sat facing him, and my sister-in-law between the two of us. And we sat there playing music as always. And we used to sit for an hour in those days, around an hour. And as I always say, the highlights of those evenings was, all of us being together. And when the sitting was over, then we'd have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, cakes, buns. And that was the highlight, really, of those nights. Anyhow, we were sitting probably for about 15, 55 minutes, something like that. And my mind had started to turn towards the coffee that we would shortly be having, and the cakes, and that's what I was thinking. And then suddenly, in my left ear, I heard very clearly a voice, and it said, switch the light out, continue to sit. Now, at that time, we were sat in red light, and it just kept repeating those words over and over and over again. It was like a loop on a tape. Switch the light out, continue to sit. Switch the light out, continue. And it went on and on. After a while, my brother said, well, shall we bring it to an end? And I said, well, no, just a minute, just turn off the light. He turned off the light, and as he did, the most extraordinary thing happened, which I always have a difficulty explaining. But suddenly, I felt something from behind me coming towards me very quickly. And I always say to people, if you've seen the film Ghost, where that spirit jumps into Whoopi Goldberg, the medium, well, it was literally like that. Whatever it was came from behind me, and the next moment, and every nerve, every muscle, everything in my entire body began to jump, 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 jump. And the next moment, I was outside myself, and he was inside, and I could see myself quite clearly. My mouth opened, and these words came out. I come, speak, brother, sister. No sooner had the words been said than he was out, and I was back in. Shortly afterwards, the light went on, we closed the circle, we had our tea and everything. Very little was said about it, which may seem strange to listeners, but it's true. Then the next morning, as I was walking into my office, the phone was ringing. I picked it up, and it was my brother. And he said, do you want to come round tonight to another sitting? And my exact word, pardon my French, was, not bloody likely, because I have to be honest with you and tell you that it really, really unnerved me, but it would be the only time ever that I was nervous in the seance room. Never again was I nervous. And that night was the beginning of everything, really, the developments.
It's such an extraordinary story because it resonates so deeply with me, and I'm sure with a lot of my listeners.
Yes.
Because that feeling of not a fear, but there's I've had incidents where entities have entered me, and I know a lot of my listeners have too.
Yeah.
How did you say never again were you so resistant and afraid? Why not? What changed?
Honestly, I don't know how to answer that, Whitley. I really don't know how to answer it. But it's true. Never again did I feel nervous within the Seance room. And that is an absolute fact. You know, I just don't know. I don't know. I can say that after that evening, of course, we continued to sit. And my guide who spoke to me on that occasion, he would come through in the first few moments, and it was always only just a few words, that's all. And if he didn't come through, then we would have what we would call a blank sitting, where seemingly nothing would happen. But of course, the seance room is the laboratory of the spirit world. And we may think that nothing is happening, but we have no idea as to what they, on their side of life, are actually doing, and obviously experimenting, etc., and paving the way for what hopefully will follow. And that's really, that was the beginning of it all, you know. I have to say that it took many, many years for my mediumship to develop. It wasn't overnight, it wasn't quick, it was slow.
Now, when you say it took many years, what happened yeah. after that was you continued to do seances, obviously.
Yes, we continued to sit, and then after a period of time, we came to a situation whereby we just couldn't continue to hold our circles in my home because we had young children who were growing up. All the other sitters were exactly the same. And so that circle, regretfully, sadly, came to an end. But then it's funny how things work out, because it wasn't long after that that I was present at a spiritualist church for the evening service, and witnessed there one of the finest demonstrations of mediumship that I have ever witnessed from that day to this, you know. And it was by a lady called Kath Matthews. She's now no longer in this world. But anyhow, after the service, I got into conversation with her. She was very interested in physical mediumship. I was telling her I was between circles, and she said, well, look, Stuart, she said, why don't you come to my home once a week? I will totally black out my lounge. I'll form a circle around you, and let's see if we can help with your developments. I said, well, thank you, Kath. And so it began. And so every week I would arrive at her home. She did indeed form a very nice circle around me. I think there was probably about eight people. I can't really remember now with Lee, but I think it was about eight people. And we would sit each week. And if my guide, Whitefeather, was to come, then it would always be in the first few moments. Otherwise, it would be seemingly a blank sitting. And I had a spiritualist trumpet made. Now, I don't know if all your listeners will understand what that is. It's not a musical instrument. If they can try and imagine a megaphone, well, that's what it was, like a megaphone. It stands about 15 inches in height, is about 4 inches at the large end, tapering down to about 3/4 of an inch at the small end. And around the large end is luminous tape, so that if it was to move in the pitch blackness, then the sitters would be able to observe that. Well, that trumpet sat in the centre of the circle week after week after week after week. Nothing ever happened. The trumpet never moved. And there is a reason, there is a purpose for the spirit world using the trumpet, which I shall explain later. But it just sat there and nothing ever happened. But the Whitefeather would always encourage us to continue to sit. And then one evening, everything changed. That night, we had what we call a blank sitting. Nothing happened. After the sitting, we all had tea, coffee, cakes, etc. And one by one, everyone drifted away until eventually it left just three of us, Kath, obviously, whose home it was, myself, and another lady. And we were sat at the table. The trumpet was in the centre of the table, and we were talking. And suddenly I felt Whitefeather returning, and the next minute I'd gone, being totally entranced. Whitefeather came through and said, switch off the light. Kath reached over, switched the light off, and as she did so the trumpet rose from the table into the air, and he began to speak through the trumpet, and that was the beginning. That was the beginning of the physical manifestations. So you can imagine the following week when everyone gathered, they were very envious about the fact they missed this wonderful occasion.
What?
It all went from there, really, Whitley.
Well, we're going to take another brief break. It's a good time to do it. And then I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the trumpet and what came through the trumpet that first time. We'll be right back. As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com. This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now. From June of 2010, talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I work with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla. And I said, well, why not? And he says, well, you can't wear that color. So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow. And, you know, that's all you should bring. And I said, well, what would happen? And they said, well, people disappear.
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain-bending, in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one. This show with Alan Lammers, you will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started. We are talking to Stuart Alexander, considered by many to be one of the world's greatest physical mediums, of his life experiences. His new book is An Extraordinary Journey, The Memoirs of a Physical Medium. It's not actually that new, but it is revised and updated. But I would suspect you don't have it, and you should certainly get it. It also has an epilogue, a very thoughtful epilogue from Leslie Kane, who is a great friend of Dreamland and of mine, and the New York Times reporter, of course. You know her work. Now, let's get back to the trumpet and what happened that first time exactly.
Well, just exactly what happened was the fact that the trumpet was in the centre of the table. White Feather enchants me, and then he asks for the light to be switched off. The light went off, and then the trumpet goes into the air. Now, I should explain to listeners the purpose of the trumpet. If listeners can imagine a megaphone, and that basically is what it is, a megaphone, so that the spirit people who speak, the voices, obviously, can be very, very soft, very gentle, and then they're amplified through the megaphone, the trumpet, and that's why a trumpet is used. The trumpet is connected directly to the medium, in this case, myself, and if I can explain that, the all physical manifestations within the seance room owe everything to a substance and energy which is often referred to as ectoplasm. Now, the word ectoplasm was actually coined by a Nobel Prize-winning medical man in 1894 by the name of Charles Richer. He coined the word ectoplasm. So what it actually is, my understanding, is that it is neither unique to the physical world or to the spiritual world, but it is common to both. Now, I understand that all life forms, within them is this substance, this energy, ectoplasm, but it is a physical medium who has an abundance of ectoplasm within them, which enables the spirit world to withdraw this substance, this energy, which leaves the medium through the ears, the nose, the mouth, or generally through the solar plexus. Now, as it leaves the medium, it can be almost, it's very, almost smoke-like, but very quickly the spirit world are able to work with it. I have no idea how, but they can then convert it into something which is as substantial as, almost like steel. It's not steel, but very substantial. And then they are able to form a rod from it and then connect the rod to the small end of the trumpet. And then, because of that, they are then able to levitate the trumpet and move it around the room. And their voices can be amplified through the megaphone, through the trumpet, so that all the people taking part in the seance can hear their voices. Well, that's quite an advanced form, if you like, of physical mediumship. But that, to my understanding, ectoplasm is necessary for all physical manifestations within the seance realm.
It gets me back to what happened to me. The man I saw was a discreet presence. Yet I've talked to other mediums about him, and they're theorizing that he was actually made of ectoplasm, that he was apparently a very advanced soul who could, using concentration, manifest as his physical form exactly as it was in his life. Yes. Would that make sense?
From everything that you've said, Wickley, it suggests strongly that you yourself are a potential physical medium. That within you is an abundance of this substance, this energy we refer to as ectoplasm.
You know, Stuart,
I wondered to myself whether if a meditative state or a sleep state or whatever, and they're able to extract that from you. And I just wonder if you were to sit week after week in seance conditions, whether or not you may be able to develop yourself. I don't know.
Well, you know, here's the fascinating thing. For the past few days, my wife lives in my life. She's here. And my listeners know all about this, so I don't need to go into it in any detail. But she's been particularly present in the past couple of weeks. Leading up to this journey that we're taking together today, and she's telling me that I do have the capability of being a medium. Actually, you answered my next question just before I was going to ask it. And now let me develop that question. I live in Los Angeles. Do you know of anyone I could connect with that I could start to do this with? Because I think I can do this.
I just don't know. I just don't know, Wickley, because I don't know. If you were in the UK and you were to ask that question, then I could possibly answer it. But obviously, you're in America, and I don't know. I understand there are spiritualist churches in America, but where they are and how many, and I have no idea. I really can't help.
If I can't find one here that's good, I am going to spend some time in the UK and do it there when the pandemic is over. I'm going to rent a place for 6 months or so and work at this there, because I know that you have a great competence personally, and you know others who do. And I'm being told by someone I know is present that this yes. is possible, and it's time for me to get off, as my wife puts it, get off your duff and do it. She knows me very well and knows that there's nothing like a kick in the pants to get me going.
I'm just wondering, Whitley, if you are aware of a gentleman called Tom Newman over in the States.
Tom Newman? No, I'm not. Can you tell me tell us a little bit about him?
Tom Newman, very, very well-informed in America. He's quite a name over there. And I'm just wondering, later on, obviously not now, but I'm wondering if I could connect you with him, because I'm sure he could advise you a lot better than I could.
Absolutely. Please do. And after the show, and listeners, if you have someone you would like to connect me with who might be able to engage in this project with me, please let me know at whitley@streber.com. And Stuart, as soon as we're off the show, I'll send you an email and you can connect us. I'll do that.
Okay. But it'll be tomorrow before I can do that anyhow.
Oh, that's okay. Well, he's in the UK, so it's in the evening there, and it'll be, you know, it's a different, but that's okay. I can wait. Yeah. I've been waiting for 75 years, apparently. So
that does seem to suggest to me that you have within you this vital substance, energy. I don't know what to call it, really, substance, energy, ectoplasm.
But it would seem so.
As I'm aware, could that gentleman or your wife or whoever, sort of materialize into a solid form?
Yeah, well, we'll see. Far as Anne is concerned, my wife, this is the next step, and she manifests all the time, and but in a particular way that my listeners know about, she manifests as a white moth, and this is, I don't need to go into the whole story here, because they already know it, and she did that just a couple of nights ago. And so she's definitely involved right now, very involved. All right.
I'm now, very surprised she wasn't.
Oh, no, she is all right. And now let me go back to, you've just got such a huge personal story. I'm tempted to say, well, just tell us what you want to tell us, but I want to not do that, because that never seems to work in interviews. And so I've wanted, what I will, let's go back to November 10th of 1973.
Yes.
In Western Terrace at Leslie Flint's house. Can you?
Sorry, in whose house?
Leslie Flint's Blacked Out Lounge.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is chapter two of your book. Can you tell us a little bit about what then happened?
Yes, I can. If I can start, Whitley, by saying that for a long time, and I'm not talking about weeks or just a few months, but for a long time, because when I was entranced, I could hear everything that was being said, but I couldn't stop it. I couldn't interfere with it. And in my mind, I was constantly thinking to myself, is this me? Is it an aspect of myself? Have I conjured this white feather up in order to meet expectations? What is it? Now, I believe that any genuine trance medium would admit to having thoughts like that, because very few, I'm convinced of this, very few, when they start entering the trance condition, are totally unaware. I think most, if they're honest and truthful, they would admit to the fact that they are able to hear what's happening, but they cannot stop it happening. So consequently, I have these thoughts in my mind. Is this me? You know, have I conjured this person up to meet expectations? What is it? Now, the one thing I will say is that, and this is important for listeners to remember, whenever White Feather controlled me, as he approached me, and that's the only way I can describe this, as he approached me, so my left hand became almost deformed. That's the only way I can explain it, really. It curled in upon itself. It wasn't painful, but it was an extraordinary thing, the way that my left hand, not my right, my left hand always did the same thing, almost as if it was totally deformed. Now, because of all the doubts that were constantly arising in my mind, on one occasion, my wife was about to leave home to go to night school, and I said, just before you go, I said, write something down. I said, give it to me. Oh, I said, put it into an envelope, seal it. I said, give it to me, and I'm going to ask White Feather, while you're at night school, I'm going to ask what he's written, what you have written, and if he can tell me, then I shall never, ever doubt him again. Then I will know that he is totally a separate individual. So she goes off to night school, and I sat there with this envelope looking at it, saying in my mind, come on, White Feather, what has she written? What has she written? Well, I must have been sat for at least half an hour, if not far longer than that, asking the same question over and over and over again. And then suddenly I saw a riverbank, and the sun was shining, and I saw this dog running up and down the riverbank, and it was barking. So I wrote it down. When she came home, I said, what did you write? She said, well, open the envelope and have a look. So I opened the envelope, had a look, and it said, sunny day, riverbank, dog running up and down, barking. I thought, well, that's it. He's totally a separate individual to me. Totally. That's proved it. That's what I thought for at least a week. And then suddenly I thought to myself, well, just a minute. I thought, I know what the explanation of this is. Telepathy. It's telepathy between my wife and myself. So I was no further on. I still didn't know if he was a separate individual. But then the occasion came, which was just so wonderful. At the time, probably the world's greatest so-called direct voice medium. For listeners who don't know what a direct voice medium is, I'll say that in such a medium's presence, the spirit people are able to speak in their own voices at a distance away from the medium, so that all the people sitting in the circle can hear the voices, can converse with the spirit people. So we were very, very fortunate to get a sitting with, to attend a seance with Leslie Flims. Now, he lived in London, Westbourne Terrace. We lived in Eastern England, Northern England. So it was about four and a half hour journey for us by road, but that didn't matter. So we managed to arrange a sitting with Leslie Flims, and my wife, myself, and my brother and his wife, and we all went down, travelled to London, to his home, where the seances were held. And, you know, people from all over the world would go to Westbourne Terrace to sit with Leslie Flims. And I mean that, people from literally all over the world would go and sit. And in his seance room, he could perhaps see maybe, I don't know, 12, 15 people, that's all. It's only a smallish room. And so we sat, and I remember when the lights went out, because it was all held in pitch blackness, and I'll explain the reason for that later if you wish to know why these seances are held in pitch blackness. So we sat in pitch blackness, and I remember when the lights went out, thinking to myself, at last I'm going to witness what Arthur Finlay witnessed with the medium John Campbell Sloan, the medium, the man who introduced us into spiritualism all those years earlier. I felt wonderful. And so we sat there and we listened to men, women and children from the spirit world coming through and speaking with their loved ones, the sitters. And it was just a wonderful, incredible experience. And then suddenly, out of the darkness came a voice, a lady's voice that I recognised instantly as my grandmother. And she had passed over only a matter of weeks earlier. She was more like a mother figure to me because my parents' marriage broke down and she more or less became like a mother figure. And I have to tell you that in the last 2 weeks of her life, she was admitted into hospital. And The whole family would go each evening and sit round the bed. And it was lovely to be there with her. And then on one occasion visiting, everyone said, well, I can't come tomorrow night, Gran. I can't come tomorrow night, Gran. And it was only myself. And I thought, well, no, I'll go. And so that next night, I set off. No sooner had I driven away to go to the hospital than the phone rang, and it was an uncle of mine. And he said to my wife, tell Stuart not to go to hospital because Gran's had a heart attack and she's not going to survive, because I'd already gone. I arrived at the hospital. I was shown into a private ward. It was just her and myself. She was laid unconscious in the bed. And then something happened between us both. Something happened between us both. Nobody knew what that was. And to this day, not even my wife knows what happened between the two of us. But what I can tell you is that 2 weeks later, sitting there with Leslie Flint in the total darkness, she came and she began to speak to me. And she spoke about the very thing that had happened between us. Only two people knew that. She in the spirit world, and me in this physical world. And I thought, wonderful. And she went. And as she went, I remember sitting there almost, I can't even tell you literally how I felt. And then suddenly, another voice began to speak, and it was the voice of this supposed guide, Whitefeather. And I listened to him speaking, and I thought to myself, oh, here's the opportunity for me to find out if he really is who he claims to be. Is it really him that speaks to me? And then the solution jumped into my mind. And I said, may I ask a question? And he said, yes. And I said, during your earthly life, did you have a physical deformity? And very quickly, he replied, do you mean my left hand? Now, if you remember, Whitley, what I said earlier, that whenever it asked me, then my left hand became almost deformed. So then, in that one sentence, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was who he claimed to be, a totally separate individual to myself. And that was really, for me, the beginning, and I've never, ever doubted him since. And incidentally, my left hand, still, when he entrances me, as he's coming towards me, I feel it begin to curl in upon itself. Nowhere near as much as it used to do all those many years ago, but it still happens. So, I hope you found that interesting.
I'll say so, and after the break, we're going to take another brief break for our free Dreamlanders. I'm going to tell you folks why I found this so incredibly interesting. Not just interesting, incredibly interesting. We'll be right back.
Support unknowncountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today. For all of Whitley's available books, visit the new unknowncountry.com store. Just click on the store tab on Unknown Country's masthead, and you'll find a treasury of Whitley Strieber books, including classics like the Communion series, War Day and Majestic, and the eerily prophetic early novel Night Church. Plus, A New World, Afterlife Revolution, and all the latest. Visit the store now and join the adventure.
We're talking to Stuart Alexander, An Extraordinary Journey, The Memoirs of a Physical Medium. Don't miss this one. I know people are not reading books as often. Most of you will just listen passively to the show. Get into this. This will build a bigger mind and a bigger life for you. There's a reason that Leslie Keene in her epilogue says that this book changed her life. It's changing my life too. You can hear that right on the show as I am realizing while I'm talking to Stuart that I have this capacity to be a a physical medium. I'm going to pursue it. That started now, today. So get the book. Get the book and get involved. The Souls of the Dead, the World of the Dead is waiting for you too. Now, before we left the air, Stuart, you were talking about White Feather. I happen to know a lot about this particular color and its relationship to this whole extraordinary world. In the fairy lore, which is related to the UFO lore, which is related to all of this, the three colors are mentioned. There's red cap, green vest, and white feather. And when these triangular UFOs are seen over over people's houses and whatnot over the years, they very often have at each corner of the triangle a colored light, red, green, and white. This is so important. And can you tell me the origins of White Feather? Has White Feather ever told you more about his, I think you're referring to him as a male, so his origins and who he is?
Actually, I can't. I've got to be honest, Whitley, I can't. He's never spoken about his earthly life, never done that. You see, to me, and this is just me, and perhaps other mediums are different, I don't know, so I can only speak in respect of myself. To me, the most important thing of all with my mediumship is survival evidence. Survival evidence. Now, White Feather tells me his name is White Feather. I've always accepted that. But if he'd told me from the very beginning that his name was something else, could have said Donald Duck, I wouldn't be bothered, as long as the evidential communications were channeled through. And that's what has been channeled through all the way along the line. So I've never really felt the need to inquire in respect of his earthly life or anything like that. To me, it doesn't matter. To me, you know, he is part now of a team. Well, he leads a team of communicators that have been with me for quite some years now. And I accept them for who they say they are. And I don't really get involved in all the ins and outs and all the rest of it. You know, I'm just, you know, survival evidence to me is everything. And I've seen time and time and time again people's lives being changed, you know, in the space of an hour, 2 hours, however long a seance lasts. You know, and that's, just for me, that's priceless, and it's made it all worthwhile. All these many, many years of sitting, you know, it's made it so worthwhile. And that's all I can really tell you, Whitley. I wouldn't make things up, you know, I can only state and say how I, you know, how I feel, and that's how
right.
I feel.
Well, I was just curious, because I think that what you may be dealing with is a very rich and complex manifestation that may be more than what we think of as simply a returned soul, but rather that this level of reality that we think of as the world of the dead is quite different from what we would imagine. Like, for example, one of the first things my wife said when she got back into contact with me was, "I'm not Anne anymore, but I will always be Anne for you." And of course, she's manifested in the physical many times in different forms as a human being, and maybe even as other forms for all I know. So, there's a something behind all of us that will project itself into our lives in a form we can understand and relate to. But there's a deep, what I call a deeper person there, I think.
Well, you know, yes. I mean, I can't sort of pass comments on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I say, all I can do is really do what I do. And I've never sort of complicated things or anything like that, or tried to understand why this or why that or what. I'm an open channel, you know, for the spirit people, for the spirit world. And that's all I can really say with you. Even if that's disappointing to you, that's all I can say.
No, no, it's not disappointing at all. And not in the least. No, no. I'm an explorer here too. We're both, and yes. So not at all. Tell us about the project.
The project.
Yes.
Right, the project. I think I ought to begin by saying that many years ago, I was on vacation with my wife, my sons, and we'd been walking somewhere. We got back to the car, climbed in the car, turned on the engine, and at the same time, the radio burst into life. And it was just in time for me to hear the very end of an interview with a man called Alan E. Crossley. And it was about his friendship with a medium, perhaps one of the finest materialization mediums of all time, called Helen Duncan. And he'd been speaking about the seances he'd attended with her, what he knew about Helen, and so on and so on and so forth. And I was so annoyed that I'd just gone in at the tail end of the conversation, of the interview. And I thought, I knew I could learn such a great deal about this man, about Helen Duncan from this man, because I've always been interested in the history of spiritualism, particularly in regard to physical mediumship. And obviously I knew of Helen Duncan, like most of the wonderful physical mediums of the past. And I just knew I could learn a great deal from him. So I wrote a letter to him when I got home after the vacation, and I sent it to the Psychic News. Now, the Psychic News is probably the oldest spiritualist newspaper in the world and still exists to this day. And I wrote to him, care of the Psychic News, hoping that they would have his address, and indeed they did. They sent it to my letter, they forwarded it on to him, and within a few days he telephoned me and we had a long conversation, and he invited me to his home. And he lived at the other side of the country to us, on the west side. We live on the east side. So for us it was like 2.5 hour journey to his home. And he lived on a residential caravan site, and he invited us. And I went together with my circle leader, and I can always remember some of the richest, most wonderful memories of my entire life, going to Elton to be with Alan Crossley. And the stories he was able to tell us of seances he attended, not only with Alan Duncan, but also with Alec Harris. Now, Alec Harris, to my mind, was probably the finest materialization medium of all time. And Alan had actually had personal experiences, sat many, many times with both these mediums, and it was just wonderful to be sat there to listen to his stories. And that's where the relationship began, really, with Alan Crossley. He found out about my mediumship. And he said, look, Stuart, why don't you come over every few weeks? He said, I'll form a circle around you, totally black out one of the rooms, and let's see if we can further your physical mediumship development. And so that's what actually happened. My circle leader and myself, sometimes accompanied by my sister, who was very involved as well, we would go there every 2 or 3 weeks, and he did form the most wonderful circle around me. Now, Alan called it the Project Circle because he'd always had this sort of hope in his mind that one day he would be able to film physical manifestations in the pitch blackness of the seance room. That was his hope. And, of course, we all thought that was fantastic, and we all, you know, wanted that to happen. And so we all went along with that, and the spirit world seemed to be encouraging. And then everything changed And I should tell you, this was probably two or three years after we would sit together in Alan Crossley's home with this wonderful, wonderful circle. But I'll tell you why it changed. Just one second. Now, I'm going to read an extract from my book, which I think is the best way that I can explain this. Right, here we go. I've put that we thought that the best thing to do was to consult with the spirit world and see what they had to think, what they had to say about it, what their thoughts were about it. Now, I put here, however, before I was able to consult with them, further doubts began to arise. My mind turned upon issues that had not previously occurred to me, and those did not directly involve the spirit people. For example, would such a film be taken seriously? Would it be assumed that some kind of Hollywood-type wizardry, some kind of modern-day computer photographic technology would be employed in the making of it? In that event, anyone entertaining hopes that it would be leading to a revolution in man's understanding would be grossly mistaken. Additionally, I was forced to ask myself, and I think, hopefully, that this is more important than anything I've just said. Additionally, I was forced to ask myself whether I would be prepared to enter the glaring public spotlight. The fact was that throughout my life as a developing physical medium, I had never, ever sought any form of notoriety. I was, and I still am, a very private man. In the event that a video which captured seance room physical phenomena was realised and accepted as genuine, it was not difficult to imagine that it would immediately become global news. The world's press would quickly descend, since this would possibly be one of the biggest stories of all time. I therefore reasoned that my circle, which had sat for so many years in quiet development, would no doubt disintegrate. Overnight, we would find ourselves under tremendous pressure from a great many directions. In all probability, lives would be destroyed and families would also be torn apart. For me, such a prospect was not only daunting, but unthinkable. That was my belief then, and it remains unchanged to this day. Now, that's what I have written in the book, Whitley, and I would say any sceptic, any critic, listening to what I've just read would say to themselves, yeah, an excuse. But it isn't an excuse. It's exactly as I see it. My circle, myself, we have indeed sat for 40 years now, for over 40 years, as a united circle. We've had no public sort of notoriety, nothing like that. The only reason that I agreed to this interview with you, Whitley, and why I agreed to an interview with Jeffrey Mishlove was because Leslie Kane pointed out to me time and time again that, look, Stuart, she said, if you agree to these interviews, it would certainly help sales of your book.
Well,
now, to
it
me,
will.
The most important thing of all is to get the message out there, that survival is reality. And so, therefore, I put my personal thoughts to one side, my personal feelings about, you know, not wanting publicity, push them to one side to do these interviews in the hope that it would increase sales of the book so people can see for themselves and realize
yes.
that death is just the entrance gate into a larger life. And well, that's why I did it.
The book is very powerful. And, it's been life-changing to me and to Leslie as well. Now, yes. We're coming up on getting ready to move into our third and final half hour. Yeah. And what I would like to say here is that is in terms of video evidence, you know, I in my life have struggled for a long time to get video evidence of the close encounters of the third kind and the various physical manifestations that yeah. occur in my life. And I have surveillance cameras all over the place and so forth. The only ones yeah. I have gotten were involve my wife, and I have lots of video of that, including one of which my listeners know about, and I don't want to get off into this story. So what the white moth that I referred to earlier, where it just, you know, I've got dozens of those up on my website because she manifests in that form, or she uses that form as a sort of avatar. And, the most recent one, which was a few days ago, the white moth disappears instantaneously. It is quite remarkable. I mean, there's no way of, you know, it couldn't happen like that otherwise. And there are many videos where she disappears instantaneously. And the white moth has done that in front of dozens of people. In fact, yeah, so there is the possibility of such things, certainly. Now, when we get back, we're going to start with a personal account by a man called Lou Sutton of what it is like to be in a seance with Stuart. Free Dreamlanders, I would like to thank you, as always, for being with us. Embrace your birthright. Get An Extraordinary Journey, The Memoirs of a Physical Medium, and find out something about where and we really are and who we really are in this world. We are lied to about ourselves and told again and again and again that we are small, temporary, physical-only beings, and we certainly are not. Subscribers, we're going to be going on and right to talk about the Lou Sutton experience and so much more, because there is really very much more here.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.